Hello, Radioland. You are listening to 91.7 WHUS Stores. This is another episode of Darshiv. I'm your host, Graham Stinnett. And today we are talking with a colleague and friend of mine, Rhonda Kaufman, who is a metadata librarian at the Homer Babbage Library. Rhonda, thanks for being on the show.
Thanks for having me.
So Rhonda and I have kind of been working on zines for the last couple of years now at the library, but we kind of each have interests in zines that go back a little bit further than that. So as metadata management librarian, Rhonda Kaufman manages metadata necessary for the discovery, access, and stewardship of Yukon library collections. They also curate Yukon's circulating zine collection located at Homer Babbage Library in Storrs. Previously, she worked as metadata librarian at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology and metadata catalog librarian at Lehigh University. Rhonda holds an MLIS from Long Island University and received her BA in psychology from UConn. She is very happy to return to her alma mater as a member of the library, and her research interests include diversity, equity, and inclusion in library collections and technical services, and zine librarianship. So, just to kind of back up a little bit, Rhonda actually donated her collection. You donated your collection to the Archives and Special Collections a couple of years ago, and the collection has been processed. It is fully available. It's actually been featured in teaching already and workshopping and exhibition, which is really exciting. And I was wondering if you could kind of talk a little bit about your zine origin story and maybe just kind of describe for our listeners what a zine is and what got you into it.
Yeah, very weird. It's weird to kind of be back talking about zines and things that I did as a teenager when you don't think that these things are going to be around for this long. Let's see. So I grew up in Storrs or Mansfield, greater Mansfield area. I went to E.O. Smith. I went to UConn. I was a townie. And I want to say, I think it was in high school, maybe 1994-ish, 93, 94. My friend and I were hanging out in a room, and I don't know, but I remember we were probably listening to like Woodstock records. Or like Bob Dylan, like sitting on the floor reading zines and stuff. So what is a zine? Well, we're talking about these zines. Like, so zines are like those, they're these DIY publications that are very photocopied, hand-produced, often with a Sharpie and copy paper and stapled. There's a lot of cut and paste. At least when we were there, it was like super cut and paste, handmade. And you go to like the photocopy shop and make, you know, 50 copies. And hand staple them and collate them. And then you go and trade them with your friends. The kinds of zines that I was into was like very personal zines, like girl zines, and you know, being a teenage girl in the 90s, it was like, let me find my other girls that are weird like me, because we were always kind of weird. And then I'm Asian American and in Connecticut, in a not super diverse area, so also trying to find other folks like me, right? Like a kid of an immigrant, and let me hear your stories about bringing egg rolls in your school lunch, and like, you know, having to translate for your parents and stuff like that. So it was nice to be able to kind of, with zines, create, find that community of other weirdos like you, and like share your stories and your products and have become pen pals. So my friend and I were like sitting on her floor, and she had learned about zines from a friend, and then also, do you remember Sassy magazine?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Sassy, which would have like zine reviews in it. And it's my goal as a librarian, I totally want to get a full run of Sassy magazine in the library.
I'm in.
Okay, cool. I know Barnard has it. They just completed the full run. But yeah, we would, and then like, she was like, dude, let's, you want to make a zine? Because she had started making a zine. And I was like, okay, sure. And it was the worst thing ever. It was so lame and awful, but it was totally cut and paste and like stupid, but it was fun. And I was like, whatever, I'm still going to send this stupid thing out to people and see what happens. So that kind of got me into zines. And then like, I kind of like, you know, mixed up the format and more of the subject matter and kind of made it my own. And I did that for a few years and stopped in high school. And then I picked it up again after I had my first kid. So I was in my 30s and I wanted to make a zine about being a mom. And I was still connected with the zine community through the zine librarianship. So, but we'll get into that a little bit later.
And so you mentioned Sassy as kind of one of the more networky kind of places to learn about zine culture. I guess that was my next question, just like where physically, I guess, would you also go? You know, did you have access to bookstores or record stores? You know, stores is very kind of isolated.
Yeah.
And not exactly the bustling epicenter of the underground, but did you kind of ever encounter this stuff in person?
In person? I mean, we would go to Northampton. So, yeah, I would find some in Northampton and, like, going to shows. We'd go to Cambridge a lot or shows in, like, New London and New Haven sometimes, like indie rock shows. And there would be zines around. But stores proper, not so much. I mean, yeah. Like, there were some record stores and stuff. But I don't remember seeing zines so much there. I mean, I really looked at, like, Action Girl newsletter for, like, zine reviews. So I would learn about new zines that I would be interested in and then just write a letter to them or trade my zine with the authors. And then you would place an ad in another person's zine and be like, hey, here's an ad. You'd include that in your letter and stuff. And then you would kind of grow your network of people that you were trading your zines with. So, yeah, and then I would read my friend's zines and then be like, oh, yeah, okay, I'll then reach out to their person that they have an ad in their zine, you know. And then, yeah, that's kind of how we learned more about each other.
That's one thing that I really enjoy about, like, the archivalness of your collection is that within the zines themselves, you know, they're all interesting because they have this sort of personal touch, personal narrative, reviews of other zines, you know, kind of like the pro forma things you do in zines. But then also the little kind of like sticky notes, you know, like Hello Kitty sticky note to like, hey, Rhonda, thanks for, you know, your last zine. Here's another one you should check out. Looking forward to XYZ. And then like some little, you know, kind of inside joke or something
right.
that you guys would have. So that sort of personal connection feels like why it's an archival collection of zines versus what we've kind of started at the circulating aspect of the library. But so in terms of, you know, again, your collection, it has a representation of a place and a period and from an individual's perspective. And you also mentioning, you know, it kind of grew with your family as you grew your family. So we have zines from your daughter, and that's really exciting as well. I'm wondering, can you kind of walk us through some of the locales of stores and like how you would go about creating your zine in this town and kind of getting it into the ecosystem?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. So picture it. Stores. 1994. This was before downtown stores. There was the Store 24 Plaza. So I'm trying to remember here. We had Store 24, which is kind of like where, I don't know, Dunkin' Donuts is now maybe, or a little bit more north. And I remember there was Club Quarters at some point, and that turned into Husky Blues. And then there was like Paul's Pizza, of course. And then the CD store, was it the Disc or something like that? Oh, I'm looking at you like you know, but you weren't
here.
Sorry. But there was a copy shop called Stop, Copy, and Run, my friends and I called it Stop Copying Hair because the guy had an awesome mullet and he was hilarious. And you could rent a mailbox there. It wasn't an official P.O. box. So I rented a mailbox there because my first scenes, I had my home address. So I would be getting these weirdo zines and my parents would be like, what is this crazy world that you're into? And I was like, oh, nothing. And then, you know, some scenes had kind of dirty stuff or, you know, kind of out there stuff on the covers. So I was like, I don't want my parents asking me about that. So I'm going to get a mailbox. And so you could rent it. It was pretty cheap and it was just right across the street. So we would go make our zines at home and it was very much like, and I would make them like in my room or at my friend Emily's house. And we'd just sit on the floor and take a bunch of like magazines and typewriters. And we had computers so we could print out some text too, but then you know, messing around with different fonts as you did in the day. And then, yeah, you take your pieces of paper and bring them over to Stop, Copy, and Run and drive the guy crazy because he's like, what are these things? And we're like, they're magazines. We're going to send them out. And then we'd often like would get like, you know, the cover would be a different color and you have to pay extra for that. You wouldn't do color copies because that was super expensive. Then you have to sit there and like sit. Then you'd grab your stack of things and go back to your house and collate all of the pages and hand staple them and then start, you know, your thing, your delivery, your distribution of it all by sending it out to folks. So that was mostly the actual places here. There was a lot of getting a slice of like a small pizza. And a Coke at Paul's Pizza and just like writing out stuff, handwriting things to create your zine or Sugar Shack. Yeah, always hanging out with smoking at Sugar Shack. And drinking coffee because they had a smoking section there at the time. Not condoning it.
It feels very 90s. Just even remembering like indoor smoking and places where high school kids would hang out. It's got a vibe. So would you ever take your zines, I guess, tabling? Like, you know, I think so much more about that in the last 20 years of zines versus the 90s when like a lot of zines were really being produced to kind of be maybe more anonymous. Was there much physical placement that you did with your stuff?
No, it was mostly all through mail. And that was the kind of the thing. I never really knew the people. I never really met them, the creators of the zines. So like they would have, it would be like their first name and then their last name would be the name of their zine. Right. And I didn't really ever meet people face to face. I had some friends who did, though, like later on, and at first I was like, whoa, what, you're meeting these people, what is it like? But it's the same. They're just like us, and they're dorky people, and we have the same interests. But no, I wouldn't table or bring them anywhere, because I personally was super embarrassed by my zine wasn't exactly like, you know, I didn't think it was really great or anything like that, but it was something to participate in this community, you know? I didn't want people to know that I was behind the thing. There was that. I liked the cloak of invisibility.
Do you want to disclose some of the names of your zines on today's show?
I think I'll pass.
Okay.
Yes. Being a cataloger, I have two personas, my professional persona and then my zine maker, old zine maker persona, and they're very separate to me. So for thinking about identities in terms of the facade, the personality that you take when you're making zines or versus your professional person, I think they are very different. Although in my zines now, I do in my zines now, since I had my kid, I talk about librarianship. So yeah, that's Bloom. I can say that. Like, that's connected to me now, but back then, oh gosh, no.
Well, now that you've brought up the sort of aspects of your professional work and your sort of creative outlets dovetailing here in a way, can you talk a little bit about the work you do as a zine librarian, I guess the actual librarianness of dealing with zines, but then also can you talk a little bit about your involvement with like the zine librarians nationally and how they kind of organize and what do they talk about when you guys get together and that sort of thing?
Awesome. Yeah. So my zine librarian origin story, I went to grad school to get my MLS to be a librarian in New York City. And my friend who got me into zines, emailed me and was like, dude, Columbia University has our zines in their archive. And I was like, what? No, that's totally embarrassing. Because there was one where we split a zine. It was like one issue of hers and one of mine. And it's like, yeah, it was like us as kids and talking about us, our childhoods. So then I looked it up and it was Barnard Library. And they're very famous for having an awesome zine collection, huge zine collection of focusing primarily on women of color. So I reached out to Jenna Friedman, who's the zine librarian there, and I was just a first year librarian grad student, and I was like, "Hey, I hear you have zines, and I'm gonna be a librarian. I'm curious." And then I used to make zines, and then Jenna was automatically like, "Hey, are you the Rhonda who used to do this zine?" And I was like, "Ooh, you found me out." "Yes, I am. Can we talk?" And then we started talking, and then she asked what I was interested in. And by that time, I had already discovered that I wanted to go into cataloging and metadata. And then she was like, "Do you want to intern here and be a zine cataloger?" And I was like, "That's a thing. One, zine librarianship is a thing. You're like, your title is zine librarian. That's amazing. And two, I can catalog these things, which is amazing." So it's kind of like the Venn diagram of my interests of zines and librarianship kind of came together.
Right.
And I'm still friends with Jenna, and we're still working together on a lot of things. So that kind of started my zine librarianship interest. And from that, I kind of discovered this. There is a huge, like you said, a huge network of like zine librarians nationally and internationally. It's kind of much like zine librarianship is that it's kind of, it's never really an official part of your job in most places. It's just kind of people who love zines and librarianship tend to kind of create collections or steward collections. So there's this kind of an ad hoc group that people started, I want to say, I don't remember how long ago it was, in the 2010s maybe. And it's a zine librarians group. And every year, or mostly every year, we have an unconference because we're part anarchist, part librarians. So we're organized, but we don't want to be too organized. So we have an unconference where we get together, people volunteer their places, and when we get there, we create our own agenda and figure out what we want to talk about. We created the Zine Librarian Code of Ethics zine, which kind of really helps people who steward these collections to kind of think about how to collect them, not necessarily prescribing how to collect and manage your collections, but kind of giving some ideas and best practices that, of course, it's going to depend on your personal collection. Thinking about things like, you know, ethics of digitization, right? These are very personal things. Do we really want to digitize them? And how do we get permissions? And these are often collections of people who are still living and might have, like me, be doing something very different and don't want to be associated with their things. So then, like, what do you do if you have, say, like a takedown request where somebody's like, "I don't want my personal stuff or that linked to me to be in an archive for somebody to look at," which is totally understandable. So we talk about ethics like that and like where to buy zines. Like, it's really best to really purchase the resource directly from the creator so that the creator gets the money directly versus through an Amazon or something like that. So yeah, with zine librarianship, we really think about and cataloging too, right? And I think one of the things that I am really try to do in curating this collection is treating a zine, in the circulating collection anyway, treating the zine like any other resource in the library. I'm going to catalog it. I'm going to create a name authority record with the Library of Congress. So somebody might be in there as Rhonda, writer of zines. That's my authority record. or, you know, somebody like that. And so it further legitimizes their creative work and their experience writing these zines. Did that blabber on too much?
No, that's perfect. And I mean, we are in this academic environment in which things, you know, need to pass through the required hoop to sort of get vetted as information or knowledge, et cetera. Like, that's what the university does. It confers upon something the validity of it, you know, through scientific method or other ways of, like, gauging things. But to kind of carry on the dance of academia, you need to be able to, like, cite stuff that you research. So I guess more towards that philosophical anarchist perspective, you know, how do you envision zines kind of being an injection of a bit of a radical element into certainly an academic library, but just a library in general?
Yeah, I think radical has been kind of thrown around a lot. But I think the act of collecting a zine and an alternative or radical periodical or alternative publications is it's in itself a bit radical in that it kind of challenges or confronts those the historical kind of history and very biased and marginalizing history of knowledge production. And that only it was, you had to be of a certain level and have these certain accreditations to be published, and then you have editors and things like that. But collecting zines in that, it really empowers these, and zines are created by mostly minoritized and marginalized groups, right? But it's, they really depict these real stories and authentic experiences. So by these academic and public and archives and special libraries collecting these things, it really legitimizes that their stories and their histories, and also kind of, I think it just sort of dismantles that kind of classic view of the library and like the big reference desk, you know, that was, you know, the pinnacle of all knowledge, you know, where it could be a little bit intimidating for everyday folk or for some people to approach a reference desk like that. Whereas if you have the act of collecting zines and making them available to folks and teaching folks how to be their own publisher and from the start and their own distributor and their own writer and their own editor, really kind of confronts that classic image of this sort of very packaged way of producing knowledge. So I feel like that's a little bit radical in a sense.
Yeah, I know we've also kind of encountered the idea of what business does an academic institution have in even bringing something like this into a space that has historically marginalized or commodified people's experiences and kind of like, you know, hoarded them away.
Yeah.
But I think the work that you and I are trying to do in terms of incorporating zines, not just into the collections, but also like zine makers and like get that to be kind of like a holistic approach to like knowledge creation. And we can talk maybe now about kind of the Liberated Zine Zone project that we've been working on. But, you know, it's an interesting topic, and I'm sure that the zine librarians have many mullovers of that idea to sort of validate why the academic institution even has a job to document it. You know, like if it's going to be seen as all welcoming, then it certainly needs to be involved in zines. But then not co-opting,
right?
Not sort of like burying it within sort of our mission to be more up to date, I guess, with things, mm-hmm. given a very difficult past.
Right. But with zines typically being housed or a method of communicating with these underground movements, right? And then now it's kind of really weird to see like actual people doing dissertations on zines and like the zine movements, like Riot Girl movements and things like that, where it's like, I guess I'm that old now, that's just a thing. But right, like zines definitely capture social movements, and so it makes sense why we would be trying to record these things, even though they were supposed to be these ephemeral publications in the beginning. But they did really capture social movements and ideas that people are creating, you know, are researching and creating more knowledge on. So
the Liberated Library Zone, I guess, just to mm-hmm. kind of back up and describe where that idea came from, which, just to put it plainly, it's a circulating zine collection. It's on Level B of the library. Please check it out if you are on the store's campus at any point and are interested in zines or learning about zines. You know, we're kind of the two folks at the library to chat with about that, but to just kind of not have to like address a gatekeeper, but just go down to Level B, handle some zines, check it out. But back in 2020, Rhonda, myself, and two former colleagues at the UConn Library, Rebecca Parmer and Michael Rodriguez, were recipients of a President's Commitment to the Community grant, where we kind of got some initial funding to get the ball rolling to acquire craft supplies, like glue sticks and scissors, you know, very expensive things here we're talking about, but just at least something to kind of build a different kind of resource that maybe the library is not typically associated with, right? And we have kind of built these little zine kits. And we got the idea from, like, kind of making this zone, mm-hmm. more or less, from a special collections librarian who has actually been on this show, Richard Aykroyd. Back in 1970, he kind of pitched this idea to make a library-liberated zone where you didn't really have to engage in collections the same way that you would with the rest of the library. It was kind of like a place to hang out, but also usually read alternative publications, take one, leave one, kind of the general process of knowledge sharing in that way. But I was hoping that you could maybe talk a little bit about the creation side, what it is that we're trying to like kind of solicit students or just community members to get involved in to contribute to this collection.
Yeah. No, it's really exciting, that first kind of project that we put together to kind of get this started, right, I think part of that, too, was we were going to have, like, a workshop, and it was going to be about, I think we were going to talk more about, it was going to be, like, an emotional kind of creation, like, making zines in times of strife type of workshop, but the pandemic happened, ironically, so we weren't able to do that. But we were able to, create those zine kits, and they're available in our maker studio as well. So one kit lives there, so you can, like, use it, and there's all the papers and collage materials and logistical materials that you need to make a zine. So thinking about the zine zone, right, having that place to come together and create, I love that idea about, you know, take a publication and leave a publication, take a zine, leave a zine. I would love to have an area like that where we get to the point where right now it's really just a starter zine collection where we try to really get a feel for different types of zines on topics and formats. So you have like DIY zines, you have personal zines, you have fan zines, you have beautiful color fold out zines or itty bitty tiny zines and kind of ones that look pretty professional. So really, we really kind of wanted to showcase what folks can do with zines and to kind of offer like inspiration to zine creators. But I would love to be able to have like a space that is incorporated with or very tied closely into the maker studio where folks can like have a larger space and just like, you know, see a zine and then go and like, let's just like have like five, you know, bring your friends and like have your own zine making sessions, or maybe have a zine club. Like, I would totally love that. That's one thing that I worked with the zine club at Barnard a lot when I was interning there, or having your own, like, that would be fun to have, like, you know, the student's guide to UConn, you know, that type of zine. But I would love a place where folks could, like, the circulating zine collection, where folks could feel like, oh yeah, I'm going to make a zine and I'm going to, you know, contribute to this zine library. I'm going to give them a copy. And then I'm also, maybe I'll have a little space over here where I can put multiple copies that anybody can take a piece. I would love for us to have, like, if folks need help printing or making copies of their zines, that we could really help with that. Maybe even having guidance from the community to see what types of zines, to see where it goes, right? To help develop and the collection scope, to see if that happens naturally or if people have suggestions on zines that they've seen that they'd like us to collect and subscribe to, which we are. We do have a few zine subscriptions in the circulating collection. How about you? What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think the creator input into the collection itself is a big part of what we're pushing for, like encouraging students to maybe take seriously the thing that they create, or at least consider it to be something worth sharing. Because we've kind of done this awesome thing by injecting a very crafty kit into what is like a very STEM place, the Maker Studio. You're doing 3D everything, you're doing engineering to like produce this stuff, and it's also nice to be able to be like, well, here's the scissors and the collage material over here. So I feel like the sort of seriousness of what it is that's being created is like kind of done away with and intentionally, hopefully, like incorporated eventually into this circulating collection. And we are, of course, always accepting donations of people's zines. We have a little box down there for folks to just anonymously drop stuff in there if they want, or send us digital copies of whatever it might be. Again, the printing side of things we'll take care of. If we get it electronically, we'll just print it out for you and put it in the collection and try and meet you where you are, I guess, on that level for the creation side of things. But yeah, that's my hope too, is to just make this maybe a bit more sustaining.
Yeah. I would love to see faculty assigning or like having zines as part of their curriculum, just like whether it's just like, let's examine the zines, or like, let's make this assignment a zine, right? Like, instead of handing in your lab report, make it a zine lab report, or we're going to do like some field work here, is hand in like your field notebook as a zine. I'm very into like STEM and zines too. I think coming from my last institution, I personally collect a lot of STEM zines. I think that's really interesting to me too. Yeah.
Yeah, that is a great idea, because I think most of the faculty that I have interacted with who do those kinds of assignments, it's more that this is a creative writing approach, and it's meant to kind of like allow you to color outside the lines and what this project might be. But it's not the actual academic work made to be zine. It's more like, let's just make zines as a outlet for creativity, which is great too.
Yeah, yeah.
We will definitely accept those.
I would love to have a standard, like, you know, like every during finals week, we're going to have a drop-in zine making session. Like, everybody will know, like, oh yeah, I need to take a break from my finals, from studying. I'm going to go, and we'll have all of the collage materials out. Just sit and, you know, we'll put on some music. We'll have some cookies. come and sit and make some zines, or take a kit to go. Right.
I'm in. And if those of you listening did see us on Level B of the Homer Babbage Library during finals week last week, thanks for swinging through. I think you just heard it here that this will be an annual thing.
Yeah,
so.
Totally. I'm all about it.
Well, that's great. So in terms of, you know, kind of thinking overview now, like, we just laid out a plan, hopefully, for the future. We've also talked about the past with your collection. How now, over 25 years, have you kind of seen zines evolve from kind of start to now? Like, the internet basically grew in that
Seriously.
Time period.
Yeah.
So what about that?
oh my gosh, 25 years?
I counted it.
Oh man, thanks. Thanks for that. Okay, so when I first made my new zine like 10 years ago, my friend wrote a review about it. And this is how like out of touch I was with zines. She was like, it's very old school DIY cut and paste. And I was like, yeah, it is. Isn't that how you're supposed to make zines? What do you mean? Like, it was literally like, here is my piece of paper and I'm going to cut out my type that I printed off of my computer. And then I'm putting that over like photocopied, like pictures of fabric.
That's a zine. Right? You just made a zine.
I just made it totally, right? That's a zine. So yeah, I'm pretty old school when it comes to zines, although the materials that we have made for the Liberated Zine Zone and the Yukon zine collections, I used templates that I made in PowerPoint. So I think like the actual construction of things has changed a lot. There's a lot of digital things. I've taught classes on like even how do I make a zine that's like a digital zine? Like how do you use the digital format? But still using the zine kind of aesthetics, right? But using the digital realm to your advantage. Right? You can link out to videos or embed audio into it or have animated images in your zine. But yeah, I think definitely the internet for sure. Like, and like you said before, like tabling at like zine fests and things. I don't think that was a thing. Or I never went to any when I was young. But now I feel like, but maybe I'm looking at it through the lens of like a collector, a zine librarian, where I'm like, I want to go to a place and get a lot at the same time. But I have tabled recently, recently being like in the last 7 years. That's pretty recent for me. But yeah, like the distros have changed a little bit. Etsy, like even being able to these online shopping places where you can, I wonder if there's a little bit of more, have things become less personal, right? Whereas before we used to send letters and have pen pals and here's an ad. And now it's like, I'm just going to buy a thing on Etsy and I'm not going to talk to you again, right? I still love your product, but it, I don't know, there's a little bit distance of being that kind of personal community.
Yeah, that sounds totally like the digital influence, I guess. Like now all of a sudden it's supposed to bring us closer together, but also there is a commodity aspect to this that maybe it wasn't
right
before. But we're trying to acquire as many zines that we think are cool for startup collection, and that's kind of fitting our bill at the moment.
Right, but if you go to these like zine fests, it's amazing because then you can actually like talk directly to the creator, whereas right, like before it's like I would totally never. I have tabled now because I'm like, I have this other, my new zine, but as like a, you know, pimply 14-year-old, I was like, no, I don't exist. Like, I don't look at my stuff. But now I'm like, whatever, give me your stuff. I'll trade you. So it's nice from a fan to actually like go and talk to the zinesters and like see like, oh my gosh, you made this beautiful thing. I love this. Like, I still think about this. There's these one ladies in LA. I went to the LA Zine Fest because we had a zine librarian on conference out there called Two Photon Art, and they were amazing. And they made STEM, like beautiful illustrated STEM zines. And I was just like, totally fangirling over them. And they're like, oh my goodness, I can't believe it. And I like took a selfie and stuff. Super fangirling, but their stuff is gorgeous and beautiful. And then I follow them on Instagram, and then I can see when their next stuff is coming out, and I purchase it directly from them. You know, it's different, but it's fitting with our current social climate.
Yeah, it also seems like the format now, just kind of having acquired materials of various kind of formats at an archives for some time now, it feels like the form is getting potentially more sophisticated than it used to be. Like in the punk scene, no one was doing watercolors right. About like, you know, whatever skid thing they were talking about. But that would be an awesome interpretation now. Like you would see that immediately and be like, oh, I know exactly what they're doing. They have talent in this area, but they're wanting to map it onto the topic that is historically
right
about this.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it just lends itself now to so many more entry points than it used to. Like, a lot of the stuff I think you've acquired for the circulating collection is, you know, kind of in line with, like, the nerd fandom of the much older period, which is very cool. But then there's also a lot of, like, return to the DIY, you know, just a general, like, and even, like, critiquing social media or using social media in what is kind of supposed to be an analog printed thing has this meta kind of narrative and critique going on that, isn't really where zines could have even had a comment in the past, unless it was just its usual kicking at mainstream culture, you know, which is kind of what a lot of that really had traction with. But just thinking through historically, like, the kinds of zines that we now bring in, at least to the archives, and weigh them against the fanzines of, like, the 50s.
Yeah.
Just so incredibly different size-wise, how easy it is now to make a zine in that format, even of, like, the cut and paste. You can just make it look that way.
Yeah.
So
that's what that zine is.
And it looks awesome. We have these little, Rhonda made this fantastic sort of guide to the Liberated Zine Zone. You can also get these on our LibGuide that we have produced through the Homer Babbage Library's website, kind of giving you the nuts and bolts as well as where to find, how to contact the two of us, and, like, what the mission is, I guess, and how to make a zine. But again, like, these kind of tutorials about the thing itself is kind of like a real ease now compared to what it would have been before.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. But it still has the aesthetic of, you know, the classic DIY.
Right. Yeah. Any zines that you're reading now, or topics that you're interested in, zines that are currently in your wheelhouse?
Yeah. Like I said, I'm really interested in, like, STEM zines. So, like, these, like, the ladies at Two Photon Art, they had some cool zines about, like, neuroscience, and beautiful illustrations about that, and just, like, CRISPR, how that whole process works, and, like, yeah, like, super sciencey stuff, and that's really fun. What's interesting that I've noticed lately is, and since the pandemic, there's kind of a new format that kind of emerged. And I'm not sure if this is across the board or if it's just with zine librarians, but it's the newsletter format, where it's, like, kind of like the old timey, like, you know, church newsletter, where it's just like a one page copy paper thing, and it's got, like, the two columns, and it's just, like, quick updates about it. That kind of happened during the pandemic. So I have that in my personal collection, and I'm really interested in pandemic zines, trying to capture that sort of what people were creating during the pandemic, and capturing what people were experiencing and feeling, particularly with Asian Americans, and then any sort of social things too, like Black Lives Matter movements, science zines, mama zines, so moms talking about motherhood, and that's what made me create my latest scene was, yeah, when I had Violet. And then anything that's really kind of cute. Same old cute things. I'm trying to think of actual titles. Oh, my friend totally makes this awesome zine about being a flight attendant, and I want them to create a new issue, but they're busy getting their license, their pilot's license. So I'm like, come on, man, let's do this. Yeah.
Nice.
How about you?
A friend of mine, Vita, just sent me zine format, kind of how to do RPGs with her four-year-old.
Awesome.
Like, how to basically simplify a lot of the rules of Dungeons and Dragons to then get, like, a four-year-old interested in, you know, pursuing some fantasy narrative and winning.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been collecting zines too about, like, games. Like, you, and then you, like, the little eight-page folding zines, and then you open it up, and then the inside of it is the board. And the instructions on the other side. And then they even come with, like, additional pieces, too. Super cool.
That is cool. They're not to that full extent, but there was one of the sort of first student donations that we received from Professor Emily Larned's class, their sort of history of the book and printmaking class. One individual I know did do sort of the mini zine that then folds out to kind of be the campaign map for D&D characters, which is pretty awesome. So nice to see that there's kind of this, yeah, through thread of nerddom, but then also like the utility of what this object really can be if you kind of push the format to its fullest. And then also shout out to the Asian American Cultural Center, who also produced a fantastic zine about anti-Asian violence during the pandemic and kind of what's all about what's completely screwed with that idea. So it's pretty great that they have gotten onto that to make a zine about how to kind of fight that sort of injustice. So
yeah, my spouse found that on campus and he got a copy. And I was like, go back and get another copy. We need two copies. He's like, okay.
We've got it in the archives, I know.
Yeah, and so. I think we have it in the circulating collection as well.
Excellent.
I know it's available digitally in the catalog.
Excellent. Well, Rhonda, any sort of last thoughts, any tips for zinesters on campus that you want to share before we sign off?
Zines are for everyone. You can make one. My kid was making zines when they were three and trading them at a little zine fest and getting little mini zines and trade. And it was like the best thing ever. But yeah, zines are for everyone and you can make them. We have supplies available and we have instructions and tutorials on our LibGuide. So I love zines.
I do too.
We zine and so can you.
Nice. Okay, well, thanks very much, Rhonda. I appreciate you being on the show to sort of chat about the project and your personal history as it relates to zines. So thanks for being on.
Thank you for having me.
All right, and we will check everybody else next time.
Bye.
I'm your host, Graham Stinnett. You've been listening to another episode of Darshiv on 91.7 WHUS Stores. For more information on the archives and special collections, you can find us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and the web. Our theme song is Dream in Casio Tone by Arable Lands. Graphic design by Melika Stinnett. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time.